Worth Repeating is made possible by series sponsorship from the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation.
Some of the stories may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the Worth Repeating podcast. I'm Tori Poole. This is the second part of the live storytelling event recorded at the Irma and Emilio Nicolás Media Center at Texas Public Radio in downtown San Antonio. The theme was Leashed, stories about mental and physical restraints that can trigger various emotions. Can you think of a time you felt bound to something or someone? Our next storyteller is Cassandra Jones. Cassandra shares a story about a night of play that left her a little tied up.
I am a kinky lass. I have been my entire life. And for the last 13 or so years, I've called the Texas kink community my home. Most of the time when people think of kink or BDSM, they think of the hyperbolic, dramatic version of 50 Shades of Grey, which is honestly just an abusive representation of what my world is like. There's no helicopters, there's no mansions. Most of the time, it's a bunch of really nerdy people getting together to take their leisure activities very seriously. Most of the time, I'm a dominant or a top, which means I like to elicit sensations in other people, do the binding, taking control of the situations and helping make these sensations and experiences great for other people. And in my relations, I tend to think of myself as the person who likes to protect and love the sweet, soft, submissive types of this world. A few years ago, I decided, though, that I needed to try the other side of the spectrum. I needed to try being a bottom. Maybe I should even try one of the most popular kinks out there of rope tying. This was never an interest of mine before now, but because it was so popular and I wanted to try the other side, I was like, okay, I'll go for it. So I asked one of my really longtime friends, who is kind of the dad of our social group, if he would consider giving me a demo tie-up session at one of our upcoming parties for our friend group. He said yes. We, in the weeks preceding, talked about things, limits, negotiated, you know, our desires for the experience. He let me know that, you know, he's very good at tying, but he doesn't always know what to do with the resulting tied up person. He's a good Boy Scout. So we get to the night, you know, we're setting things up. We're in a middle bedroom of a small to medium sized house. Again, no mansions, no helicopters. And we get about going. I start on my knees on a padded floor with a wooden arch above my head. My friend takes out the jute rope, which is kind of scratchy, but not the scratchiest of ropes out there, and proceeds to tie me with my hands behind my back, me on my knees, a little tight, but not too tight. And there's a suspending line that goes above my head to the wooden arch above me. Just enough that I'm in this chest harness struggling, but I can lean against the rope that leads above me. Just kind of feel the groan, feel the support, feel the containment and the safety in that feeling. You know, I'm all tied up now. And it gets to the point where he doesn't really know what to do with me. And so we're just talking, chit-chatting. You know, what was work like this week? What happened in your latest D&D campaign? Things like that. And we're just hanging out while I wiggle around and feel what it's like. And then I see two of my friends, lady friends in the corner, kind of peering in the doorway like, ooh, what's happening in here? Oh, Miss Cash, she never gets tied up. She never bottoms. Oh, my God. And they're watching, and I'm like, I ask my friend's permission to involve some others in the scene. And he says, yeah, sure. What? I don't know what to do with you. And so I was like, oh, ladies, come over. I need touches. my two lady friends come on over. They start, you know, playing with me, my sensations. I start charming, even though I'm still in the binds and on my knees. I start luring them in my, like, flirty, charming, dominant woman way. And, you know, we're playing around, pushing and pulling. Somehow, at one point, I was able to, while still tied up, throw one of my friends on the ground and sit on her. At this point, a lot of people were watching. And they were like, oh my God, you dominated the room from being bound on your knees. That's a hell of a dom moment. And as I thought about it, you know, in the moment and the weeks afterwards, I realized I had never really felt so safe and contained in my body. I am a very hypermobile person. My limbs are a little loosey-goosey. My ankles give out all the time. My body is just not something I can trust often. And so there have been a lot of kinky things that I've not tried out until I have practiced over and over and over again, and it's muscle memory. But being bound and supported, my joints weren't going anywhere. I could feel that safety in my own body and control over my own dominance in a way that had never really happened for me before. At that point, I realized that there was a certain power in being a bottom. There was a certain power in receiving sensations, and there was a certain power within my own sexuality and sensuality in being able to trust my body in that way. So in the years since then, I've incorporated a little more bottom-like behavior, expressing my bottom side, my submissive side, but also, you know, controlling my body in those ways. Maybe embracing a corset a little more often. Maybe embracing a chest harness a little more often, even though it doesn't show the normal side of dominance. And it also brought me closer to my friends, my chosen family. Being able to experience such fun, such pleasure, such trust and safety with a spicy activity, knowing that they savored me, they trusted me, they wanted me, and they valued me, both Cass and Sexy Cass, has been a great joy for most of my life and has even led me to my current career in counseling and sex therapy. You know, this is my hyper-focus, honestly. This is something of a passion of mine that has led me through my career development, and I'm really grateful for the pleasure gifts have given me. Thank you.
Cassandra teaches us that you can still dominate from a restrained position.
This program was made possible with support from the 80/20 Foundation, striving to transform San Antonio by issuing grants to public charities that attract, grow, and retain San Antonio's future workforce. For this and more information, visit 8020foundation.com.
Worth Repeating returns this fall, and I want to hear from you. Take some time and tell us what you thought of this past season. Suggest some themes for next year, or maybe just give us our flowers. Visit tpr.org/WR and fill out the survey today. Not a survey guy or gal? You can shoot me an email directly at worthrepeating@tpr.org. Our next storyteller is Lacey Lansford. Lacey shares a story about her day her son decided to get some Skittles.
It's October 2020. We're at the height of online teaching. I have two sons. They are a freshman and sophomore in high school, and I'm starting my 21st year of teaching middle school, but my first year of teaching band through a computer. I'd kept my boys tight. They'd gone to school with me at my middle school, even though we live in a different school district, and now they're at home doing the online learning thing. I'm trying to get all my lesson plans together. I'm trying to get all my videos together. I'm trying to get just a grip on the online learning. And I get a text from my wife in the afternoon that says, "Hey, babe, you busy?" And I was like, "Busy? That doesn't even start." And I kept with what I was working on. And then I realized about an hour had passed, and I was like, "Hey, I should probably give her a call." And so I ring her up, and she goes, "He's okay, but..." When somebody starts a conversation with, "He's okay, but," some bad stuff has happened, right? She says, "He's okay, but Jesse's been run over by a car." I said, "But he's okay?" She goes, "Yeah, he's okay." And so I just packed everything up and I headed home. Now let's rewind. It's the afternoon. Jesse's our 14-year-old. He's the high school freshman, and he gets this craving for Skittles. He gets a real bad craving. And he doesn't have any Skittles at home, but he's got money. And the Circle K is less than a mile from our house. Bing! Light bulb moment. You know, he's got an idea. And there was nobody at home to tell him he couldn't do it. So he decided he was going to head on out and get him some Skittles. But then he remembers, you know, "I've got a hairline fracture in this femur. I'm not supposed to walk without my crutches." But guys, how many of y'all listen to the doctors when you've got problems? Okay. He was already a little man at 14, and he didn't want to use those crutches. So he decided he would just take his bicycle, and then that way he wasn't walking on the leg. Bing! Brilliant ideas. Just light bulbs everywhere, you know? So he sets out on his journey, and on the way, there's a few driveways off Dezavala Road. We live on Dezavala. There are a few driveways that he has to cross, and as he's going through the AutoZone driveway, he sees this lady, and they get their wires crossed, and she thinks he's telling her, "You go on ahead," and he thinks he's telling her, "I'm fitting to come through here." And next thing he knows, he's under her Jeep. And he can't get up, and he can't move, and he slaps the side of it. She realized that something up is up. She puts it in reverse, runs over him again. To get off of him. Well, this was during the school day. He was supposed to be in class at the time. So now he's full of adrenaline because his foolproof plan has a couple of problems. He hops up really fast. He's full of adrenaline. He gives her the thumbs up and he tries to stand on his leg. He's okay. All right. I'm feeling some, that's going to take a whole lot of hydrogen peroxide. Okay. All right. And he looks at his bicycle and it's completely mangled. And so he looks at this lady and he goes, "Hey, could you give me a ride home? My bicycle's real messed up. I don't think I can get the whole way there." "Well, shouldn't we call the police?" "Oh, no. They'd probably call my mom. I need to get home and start damage control." So he talks this lady into putting his bicycle in the back of her Jeep, and they head on to the house. They get home and his older brother comes shooting out the front door. He's like, "Bro, you are so dead." He's like, "Yeah, get my bike out of the, we got to figure out." And the lady says again, "Well, shouldn't we call the police?" He's like, "No, I'm his brother. I can vouch for him. He lives here. You can go on. We're good." Well, about that time, the next door neighbor comes over to see what all's going on, and he gets the lady's information, thank goodness, and he starts trying to clean up this leg. The boy has road rash from here, and he's got this nasty wound on the side of his knee, and he's got tire marks right here. Did you know you can't just wash tire marks off with soap and water? We learned that day. And funnily enough, we were actually foster parents, and we adopted these boys. So we had to take classes. We had to pass inspections. We were trained. We were fully licensed to raise these kids. Nowhere in the training did they mention that tire mark business, you know? So the neighbor finally convinces the boy to call one of his mothers, and I may have some anger management issues. So they call the other one. When I was in counseling, I was working on it. So then she's the one that calls me. And by the time I get home, everybody's real worried about what's Mama Lacey going to do. I mean, it was during the school day. She's going to lose her mess. It's going to be epic, you know. And as soon as I saw his leg, it got to me right there. My baby was hurt. It could have been really bad, but here he is. And I just started crying, like the ugly cry, you know, automatic snot, the whole thing. And his older brother comes up and he gives me this really tight hug and he goes, "Way to go with that appropriate emotional response, Mom." You keep doing the work. Keep going to counseling. Thanks for noticing. And we decide this boy needs to go to the hospital. He needs to go to the emergency room. It needs to happen. And he didn't really want to go because it was the height of COVID and everything. And he stands up and he's kind of hobbling around. He's like, I'm fine. I said, "Are you fine or are you just man fine right now?" And he comes back with, "You're being such a lesbian, mother." All day, every day. Anyway, so we finally get him to the hospital. They check him out. They irrigate the wound. They hold him overnight. They do all the tests and things. He has to get a skin graft. And because of the skin graft, they have to put him in this really tight neoprene, like, brace deal. It goes from his hip all the way down to his ankle. And he comes hobbling in the next day. You know, I've been on pins and needles all night, worried about the kid. And he comes in. I'm like, "Oh, baby, how are you? Are you okay? Do you need something? Do you want something to drink or something to eat?" "Well, I never got my Skittles." Thank you so much. You guys have been great.
We do hope that Lacey eventually got her son some Skittles.
This program was made possible by the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, striving to enrich the quality of life of San Antonio residents and visitors by creating art programming and helping people experience art. For this and more information, visit GetCreativeSanAntonio.com.
Our final storyteller is Angelica Covarrubias. Angelica shares a story about a dog that changed her family completely.
Growing up, I had a dog, and I really wanted the dog, but I didn't want to take care of the dog. That was my mom's job. And because it was her job, we were never allowed to have another one when she passed away. So I never considered myself an animal person. Growing up, I didn't have any more dogs. I had a cat that I was allergic to, but that was the end of that story. After so many years, I never decided to get another pet, but I had a husband with three girls, and all of a sudden, my husband's coworker was living behind us, and they had baby pugs. Their pugs had babies, and my husband was like, "Why don't we just try it?" And I'm like, "No, because then I'm going to be my mom, and I'm going to be the one to feed it and clean it, and everybody wants to cuddle with it, but I have to do the hard work. That doesn't seem very fair." He's like, "Why don't we just try, like, 24 hours just to see, like, let's just see. Well, of course, right? Because she's so little at this time, all she does is sleep. And she's cute and she's cuddly and she looks like Frank from Men in Black, the cutest. So we decide to keep her. And guess what? I became my mom. I took care of her. I fed her. I cleaned her. All the things. And at night, she would cry because she was so attached to my husband and she had to sleep like in his arm, right by his armpit. And she'd cry if she didn't. And I'm like, "Girl, that's my man. What's happening right now?" But nonetheless, to get a good night's rest and avoid hearing her cry all night, she slept in the bed with us. A few weeks go by and we come home from dinner and we can't find her anywhere. And it's impossible for her to have escaped the house. The doors are closed. The windows are closed. She was nowhere to be found. We tore up that tiny little house like crazy, only to find her nestled in under the couch. And that was the moment I realized how much I loved this little dog. She became a part of our family. Everybody was super close to her. She was cute and cuddly. Well, Months and weeks go by, and of course, at this time, I'm working in the office during the day. My husband is working nights, and so you know what it's like getting ready for work, right? The hustle and bustle of making sure you have everything you need, the doors, everything's closed and shut. And that's exactly what happened. My husband let her out so that she could use the restroom and went back inside, and when he came back out, she was gone. And there had been an accident at the corner of the street, and we lived off of a pretty busy street. And nobody had seen her, so he calls me and tells me he can't find her, and I'm panicking. I get home. His boss had already picked him up, and he's like, I'm going back home. I'm going to help you find her. And I'm in tears. The girls are questioning me, right? Like 50 questions. Where is she? Where did she go? Where could she be? And I have no idea what to say because I don't know. And that night, my husband walked up and down the neighborhood. We asked everybody we could. Some people thought they saw her. Some people said they did. They'd seen her walking somewhere. It was a whole thing. And I cried myself to sleep that night for a dog that I didn't even want, but I knew I wanted back. At that time, I didn't have social media. And I didn't realize how big the pet community, much less the pug community, was. It's a big community, if you didn't know. I had a lot of people reaching out to me for sightings. They thought they had seen her here and there. And unfortunately, every lead was a dead end. Months go by and I get a phone call from somebody who swears they think they have my dog and they'd paid $500 for her. And I said, well, if you take her to a pet store or even the clinic, a vet clinic, make you know, scan her microchip and we'll find out if she's mine. Turns out it wasn't my dog because I never heard from them after that. Months go by, more months go by, and my husband and I had an opportunity to move into a brand new neighborhood and a brand new home, and it was really bittersweet because I knew once we left, she'd never come back. But it was beautiful, right, to be in a home that was brand new and a neighborhood that was brand new. So we move. We move, and by this time, I'm actually working remotely, and he's, you know, going into work. I don't know about you guys, but I screen my phone calls. If you call me and I don't have your number saved, I'm not picking up the phone. And I noticed that an Austin number called me. So I pick up the phone and I see that there's a voicemail, and it is the Pug Rescue of Austin letting me know that they had found my dog and they wanted to know if I still wanted her. By this time, it had probably been a year, almost a year and a half. So I'm excited. I can't believe what I'm hearing. I call my husband. I tell my daughters. So my coworker just so happened to live right down the street from where this pug rescue was. And he's like, I'll pick her up. Meet me at Bucky's. We'll meet and we'll take her from there. And I'm like, yes, we're going to meet at Bucky's. I'm going to get my dog. And we did. And it was like she had never left. It was the most beautiful thing ever. And I'm happy to report that this December, she turned 3 years old, and we got to celebrate with her. Everybody in the neighborhood knows who she is. They know where she lives, even so much so that for Halloween, it was like I took her trick-or-treating because everybody greeted her before they greeted me and my kids. Yeah, it was really beautiful. She's been in our home for a while now, and I say all this to say that, you know, what the biggest thing that I take away from this experience is that maybe you might lose someone or a pet doesn't mean that they can't find their way back to you. Thank you.
We're glad a piece of her family found their way back home.
This program is made possible by the Lifshutz Foundation, an arts, culture, and humanities fundraising organization.
Worth Repeating relies on supporters like you. Supporting your favorite programs is important now more than ever. I ask you every show, and now I'm asking you every podcast. If Worth Repeating is a program that you turn to with fidelity, consider becoming a new or increasing your sustaining membership. You can do so by visiting tpr.org and clicking the red donate button today. You can leave a personalized note and tell them Tori said, meow, 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 meow. That's it for the Worth Repeating podcast. Do us a favor and give us a like, subscribe, or review us wherever you stream podcasts. Support for Worth Repeating comes from the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation. Worth Repeating is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Tori Poole. Thanks for listening.